Here is the interview with Lena Haug. She was a finisher in the 1,000-kilometer Mongol Derby. This interview started a little bit late in the recording, so please enjoy. It's riveting. It's exciting. There's a lot of information. Here you go.
And I was 17 at the time, and I spent 7 months there guiding. I'm bilingual. I speak German as well. My mom's German. And I was an interpreter for that company and ended up getting the most wild adventures in the mountains of the Chilean mountains, packing horses and customers from all over the world. So horses have been quite the opportunity for me to grow and get to know the world a bit.
Well, that's fascinating. Okay, so you got wind of the Mongol Derby in January of 2020, or sometime in 2020, and you just decided to apply. So it was a long process to get in to the 2022 Derby. Is it a once-a-year Derby?
Yeah, so I found out about it many years ago, but I applied in 2020 and then got in for 2021. But with COVID, there were border closures that happened. We were all set to go in 2021 up until about 2 months before the race, and then the border shut back down, and it got postponed to 2022, which, yes, there's only one race a year normally. This year, they did back-to-back races because of that last-minute closure, so technically there was the 2021 race in July, and then the 2022 race in August, which the race was in July, our race was one direction, and then the second race did our race in reverse, which, mind you, every year that the Mongol Derby happens, it's a different route, and it's undisclosed until you get to the start line. You do not know the route until you get there.
Okay, well, it's time to get into the race. I want to hear about the prep for the race because I'm sure it was long, but let's start with the race and we'll go backwards and hear about how you prepared for it. So tell us about the race. You just gave us a picture. We know it was 1,000 kilometers or 620 miles and an unknown route. So
this is just the beginning of the insanity. Everyone should buckle up because there's a lot of details that make this race very complex. And mind you, I did a lot of research looking at videos that other riders had put up or stories or interviews and read. There's a book called Rough Magic that's about the Derby as well. And the race itself was 100% more insane than I anticipated. And I anticipated a very crazy time. So the route is undisclosed. We don't learn it until we get there. We had maps, paper maps to study once we got to our start line, which again is an undisclosed area in the middle of central Mongolia. The route is essentially reenacting, well, the general area of the race is reenacting Genghis Khan's mail, like Pony Express through Mongolia in the 1200s. And so what it's attempting to do is cover the Mongolian steppe. This is central Mongolia. And Mongolia is an enormous country considering that it only has 3 million people in the entire country. And 75% of those people are in the capital, Ulaanbaatar, which is quite astounding. So central Mongolia is very much uninhabited other than scattered with nomadic families. And these nomadic families that have enough horses to supply us racers, they are our waypoints, and there are 29 waypoints along the 1,000-kilometer route. You have to hit every single one of them because at each horse station is what those waypoints are called. You have to swap horses. You can restock on food or water, or you can sleep, and there is a veterinarian there that's going to check that you haven't overrun your horse or that they don't have any saddle sores, and they basically do a full physical exam on each horse that comes through that horse station. If your horse does not make a heart rate, they need to get down to 56 beats per minute within 30 minutes. If they don't, you get slapped a 2-hour time penalty, which means you have to sit for 2 hours and cannot continue racing. You can only have 3 of those in the whole race, and then you're disqualified.
It sounds like they really take care of the horses because this is grueling,
yes.
Not just for the rider, but the horses is part of the whole picture. Okay, keep going.
Okay, just getting started. Yeah. We all got a GPS. It's a Garmin GPS system that's a handheld. And the maps are overlaid onto the GPS. So we have the waypoints pre-programmed in on the maps that are on our GPS. However, the maps are 1970s Soviet maps that the topography was accurate, but everything else was wildly inaccurate, like water sources, roads. You couldn't really trust it. So when we say there's 620 miles is the route, that is as the crow flies. That's putting a line between two points. That is not what we rode. You have to self-navigate the entire time, and which means pulling out a GPS while you're flying across the steppe on these horses that I will go into detail about the horses in a moment, because that is its own moment in time. I would say we probably covered closer to a 750 miles based on having to navigate each horse station.
Just a quick question. Was anyone else with you, or were you on your own? Did you have a way of communicating if something happened?
So along with the GPS, we have a Garmin InReach tracker. And the tracker has three buttons. A pre-programmed one, which meant human emergency. Pre-programmed two, which was a horse emergency. And then an SOS button, which was like, everybody drop what you're doing and help me. I'm in critical condition. And that button was not to be pushed unless you were in very critical condition. That was not really a means of communication. It was in case of emergency. And it also tracks your dot. So many people, I don't know if any of the listeners did, but you could track the race. My dot was a little gray dot, LHA. And you could essentially track the riders through the course as they went based on these Garmin trackers. So I didn't have any way of communicating with anyone. And as far as riding with other riders, that was a case-by-case situation. If your horse, I guess it's time to dive into the horses, you don't have control of these horses. They are feral. They are absolutely feral. So turning is a luxury. Braking is not a thing. You're on a freight train. They do not stop unless they're tired. So when you're getting the horse saddled up, the herders help you saddle the horse and you hop on, you're just going. You're not stopping. You're not waiting for anyone. There's no like team. I mean, there you could try and team up, but really it depended on if your horses matched well and wanted to run together.
Was that true for you? I mean, was there ever a horse in your 9-day journey that didn't work for you? I mean, and what would you do if that was the case? Or did you have to learn to make it work?
You would just learn to make it work.
Between the two of you.
I turned around on one horse only because it was a 40-kilometer leg, which is close to 30 miles. And he was already huffing and puffing like 2 kilometers out. I was like, then we're not going to make it work. Because you can only ride from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And I was this was my last leg and I wasn't going to make it to the next horse station. So I swapped to another horse. But as far as like riding with other people, I rode with a few other people quite frequently. And then I did ride alone quite a bit as well, which was amazing. I mean, the landscape is phenomenal. I've never been in a place where I've never seen fences. There's no trees. It is endless grassy hills and wild herds of horses, sheep and goats. And you see everywhere in the horizon, you see dots of white gares, which is the Mongolian word for yurt. Actually, yurt is the Russian word for yurt. The gares are the family's homes, you know, and you see everywhere scattered in the horizon these small nomadic communities, and it's extraordinary. So without there being a dull moment because of all the chaos that ensued throughout each leg of the race, you were just blown away by the drop-dead gorgeous landscape.
And it sounds like the generosity of the people that you stayed with. I'm wondering if this derby, this horse race across Mongolia, is a financial help for some of these people if they really are supported through the derby also.
I'm really glad you asked that. The majority of the fees, so it was about $15,000 for the race bid, and there were 47 riders in our race. The majority goes to the herders. Yeah. And it goes to paying for their time, for getting the horses ready, for their, you know, they're feeding us. We're eating just traditional Mongolian food along the way and housing us. And they were our absolute lifeline. I can't imagine doing this race without the hospitality and generosity of these families. They took us in like we were their family. And that is really Mongolian nomadic culture. is kind of an open door policy of welcome stranger, welcome to my home.
It's a very unique way to learn about a new culture. And you had to do the whole thing with the derby and the horse race, getting to know the horses. But this whole aspect of being integrated with a culture and a people is wonderful.
And Mongolia is known as the horse people. I mean, going back in history, back to Genghis Khan, the reason he was such a wild warlord was because of the horse. His warriors and him, they would take two or four horses each so they could swap horses and maintain their distance. They took over Europe. I mean, that's a huge amount of territory. And it is all thanks to the horse. And you know this when you get to the country. The horse is revered and honored and sacred to Mongolians. And when you watch Mongolians work with their horses, they don't come off. They become one. They are one fluid being together. And it's quite extraordinary to witness.
So while you're witnessing that, maybe you learn a little bit about that. I mean, you've been with horses your whole life. And I wonder if your relationship with horses has changed just a little bit because of seeing that and being a part of that.
Yeah, the horses are, so these are very small, Mongolian horses are very small, and they're very hardy, and they're very tough. And they have to be so because they spend most of their lives in herds, big wild herds, surviving on their own. They have to dig through the snow in the winter to eat the forage from the ground. And in Mongolia, they've tried importing other breeds of horses, and they've just died off because they're not hardy enough to survive in the Mongolian climate. It's like the tundra, very close to Russia, which is just to the north. The horses are, they're tough. And the reason why they're feral is in order for them to survive better on their own in these wild herds, where any kind of pampering would not bode well for their survival. And that was probably the most striking part, is the horses really were quite feral. I mean, there's no other way to put it. The herders would work in teams to get them saddled for us. I would hold my bridle up, because once you get to the horse station, it's first come, first serve once you're through the vet check. So I could not tell which horse would be fast. I mean, it is, there was no rhyme or reason looking at their feet, their body, their whole demeanor of which ones would be absolutely crazed, which ones would be fast, and which ones would be slow. There, I could not pick it out, and I just trusted the herders that they knew their horses best. So I would hold up my bridle, and I'd say, "Hortan mor," which means fast horse. And they would take my bridle, go find a horse, and unless it had an absolutely deranged look in its eye, I would go for it, and they'd saddle it and, like, help me on. And by the time one foot's in the stirrup, they're already bolting or bucking. Bolting or bucking. The first 5 minutes is incredibly stressful. The horses are usually bouncing around, bucking, and then they bolt and take off, and hopefully you're going the right direction because they are off to the races.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I just want to remind our listeners, I'm Susie Prez. I'm here for the morning show today, and I'm speaking live in the studio with Lena Haug, and she is a finisher of the 1,000-kilometer or 620-mile Mongo Derby. We're learning all about it, and it is amazing. So let's continue, because like you said, there's so much to talk about. And you're talking about, why did you want a fast horse? Because it is a race, but like I said before the show, just finishing is a winner.
Absolutely. And that was thankful. I'm so glad I went in with the mindset of wanting a full experience of the Mongol Derby. And it's an endurance race. You have 10 days to complete this race. And if you are even a little bit injured, you're not going to be able to go much further. Like 80 miles a day on a horse, on actually 3 to 4 horses, you're switching 3 to 4 times a day when you get to the horse stations, is so hard on your body. And you can't be thinking about the finish line. You need to think each leg on its own as its own race, because each horse is different. Each obstacle that you encounter is going to be different. And biting off one leg at a time was a successful strategy for me. And that was pretty much my only strategy. Because like you said, it's very long, and finishing the race in one piece is a huge success. And that is, if anyone asks me, I placed 14th out of 47. But if anyone asks me, did you win the race? Yes. Hands down, I won this race for myself and for the experience I got. It was irreplaceable and incomparable to any other adventure.
You talked a little bit about the gurs, which were the stations where the horses were, and or a place you could rest and eat. So 80 miles a day, I'm just trying to equate that to thought, on the back of a horse is intense, as you said, but how did you do with food and the resting? Did you rest during the daytime, during that 12-hour period from 7 to 7 that you could ride?
Or, no rest.
No, you just
no
went.
No rest for the okay. weary. The only rest I was at the end of the day, but at each horse station, I, around day 4, kind of lost my appetite. And it wasn't, the food was, I really enjoyed it. Mongolian staple food is mutton, so sheep or goat with rice, sheep or goat with soupy noodle, sheep or goat in a little dumpling. Vegetables are not really a thing in Mongolia, outside of the capital. They don't have any agriculture. It's all imported food as far as vegetables go. And it was, the other main staple is horse milk, fermented horse milk. It's called arag. It's quite sour, and it tastes a bit like goat as well. Kind of everything tastes a bit like goat. And then milky tea, which is cow's milk with salt that's heated, which was honestly really, really good to drink because it's like an electrolyte with protein. During the race, you're burning about 15,000 calories a day. So you're like running a marathon every day. And by day 3, eating meat throughout like a lot of high intensity exercise was no longer appealing to my body. And so I started living off of, all the families have these big bowls with hard candies, like plastic wrap candies. And I would stuff my pockets with these candies and live off of arag, so the fermented horse milk, and milky tea, the salty milk, and candy, which my dentist would be appalled. However, it kept me alive and it kept my gut happy and okay. Because hopping on a horse that's deranged and, you know, jumping towards the sun and then bolting and racing, and you just need to hang on for dear life, it doesn't go very well with eating a soup of mutton, in my opinion.
Maybe a little rice, but did they ever use butter, like yak butter?
I did not see any butter. Okay. Like canola oil. Uh-huh. Was
imported canola oil.
Probably, but... yeah. Canada oil.
So obviously the question would be, did you lose weight? Did you have to beef up? Before the race, were you kind of advised to put on some weight because you're going to lose a lot of weight?
That is so funny you would say that. I did lose a lot of weight. I lost 18 pounds. I looked a little gaunt at the end. But I am a body type that's pretty strong and sturdy. And before the race, so the race, you can only be 170. I usually weigh 145, and I'm 5'5", 31. Eyes are green, Capricorn. But... The weight limit for getting into the race is 175 pounds. So men, the men getting into this race tend to go on pretty extreme diets to lose weight, to make weight, to be in the race. After we got weighed in, we were fed like kings and queens, which made us all feel like we were in the Hunger Games, where they were like fattening us up before battle. And for 2 days where we had pre-race training, where we got to learn about, you know, what the course and like our medics and, you know, all of the details when we got to the start camp, we were eating nonstop, which it turns out we really needed that because a lot of us lost a lot of weight just even from exercising so hard. I mean, you're working very hard. And some people had some GI issues. There wasn't too many issues in our race. I've heard in past races of kind of horror stories where people are dealing with like quite severe GI issues from either water contamination or just upset stomachs. Mind you cannot get off the horses between legs. Under no circumstance should you ever try and get off the horse between legs because they are feral and you will never get back on, and or they will pull away and tear your rein and just disappear off into the horizon with all of your gear because they are not handleable like our domestic horses. Once you are on, stay on and ride. I know of a few riders that, you know, they had to go pee or something, but they would just pee their pants. Like, you uh-huh. don't get off the horses.
So that's a whole nother aspect about the fact that you could not get off the horse for 25 or so miles. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I found that, for me at least, I was drinking up until my water bladder broke in my water vest I was drinking probably about 2.5 liters per leg and not having to pee. Just, it was either sweating it out or just stressed sweating it out. And I would kind of force myself at each horse station to like chug a bunch of water, try and go pee, pick my next horse, and then be ready to go.
Very interesting. There's so many aspects about this race. I just want to remind the listeners again that I'm speaking with Lena Haug, and she's a finisher of the Mongol Derby, which is amazing. And if you're a listener and you want to learn more about this, Lena will be at the Panada Theater tomorrow night for a special POAC, that's the Pendere Arts Council series. And there's a movie, All the Wild Horses, and I heard about this movie. Someone saw it and just said it was fascinating. It is an award-winning documentary about the Mongol Derby, but she'll also be talking about her experience this year as being one of the participants in this amazing horse race. So we've been talking about the horses and the challenges. Let's continue, because there's more.
I'll add a little to the challenges. So we're on feral horses. They're not like our wild horses where they're wild. They're feral, like stray cats, where they've been handled a bit and they just would rather not. And they're going to fight about it until they tire a little bit and then they just run. A lot of the time, the other obstacles that get in your way is you're self-navigating, so you're trying to figure out where you're going. You're using these antiquated 1970s maps that are riddled with error. And you also have one of the greatest concerns I had is in the steppe, there are these little rodents. They look like voles, and they create these underground tunnels throughout the steppe. And when your horse is either distracted by you as a rider or something in their environment or your pack, they aren't looking where their feet are going quite as intently as they would if they were just on their own. And most of our severe injuries from other riders happened when these horses would flip by falling in these vole communities. And that was a thing that really terrified me probably the most, is that you're hurling hellbent for leather across the steppe, but you're also very aware that at any moment you could come to an abrupt halt and fly over their head. And the horse could tumble and roll because of these little vole situations. So that was something that was always in the back of my mind, is kind of a stressful thing to keep an eye out for. And you can't really see them because they're tunnels. The other obstacles are dogs, a lot of wild dogs. And they use these big, they're called the Mongolian Pyrenees. And they look like a Great Pyrenees, but they're black and tan. And they're dreaded and slobbery. And they're honestly very quite friendly when you go to them at the gare by on foot. But if you're running by, they take you as a predator. And they will pursue you in this hot, crazy, wild pursuit dog chase where they'll run and try and leap up and grab your heels, your horse's tail. And if you have control of your horse, which you don't, you could probably slow to a walk and, you know, make the whole situation come to an end. But in most of the cases, you just would pick up your line and just flog your horse as fast as they possibly could go so you wouldn't get nipped by these dogs. So there are a lot of unknowns along the way that keep your head very busy. And I think that maybe where we head next is mindset and the experience of kind of letting go of control and expectation. And that was maybe the most amazing thing about this derby was around the halfway point, I was already ready for the unexpected, but I started to really embrace the unexpected. It was like my mind got really quiet and peaceful and blissful in this kind of serene chaos that was a constant. And it allowed me to really like welcome the unknown in a way that I couldn't. There was no such thing as good or bad, right or wrong. I couldn't think in the past or the future. I was so present that everything was just as it should be. Even if it was blowing up in my face, even if a horse was galloping away with my gear, my saddle, it was as it should be, because 2 hours later, because that horse took off with my gear, I had to wait And then I got to ride through a tunnel of rainbows for an hour. And that wouldn't have happened if that you know, other thing would have happened. I mean, things kind of lined up, and it felt incredibly serene to be in that mindset.
So I hear what you're saying is you could prepare for everything, but you could not prepare for the emotional, I'll use the word spiritual, experience that at some point, you said 4 or 5 days into it, you became very present with and accepting of what was right in front of you.
Exactly.
Due to the race. You had no idea that was coming.
Yeah. Yeah, well put. And that was something that I really wanted to bring home with me, was this release of control and really allowing the things that were happening to be honored as exactly as they should be. And in that mindset, my mom asked me when I got back, she's like, "What did you think about all day?" I'm like, "Oh, I did not work on thinking. I was so present. I was so in the moment. There was no thinking. I was just human. I was human strapped to back of horse." And just very simple and raw and vulnerable.
People spend years trying to get to that point. It took you 5 days. And the spirit of adventure that you carried with you all your life to get there. Wow, good job. One of the things that you mentioned is the horse is running the whole time.
Yes, correct.
That's surprising. There's no like, "Hey, let's stroll for a while."
Some of them would stroll. Like, you could get them into a trot, mm-hmm. like slow down to a trot, because you really do want to pace them. The horses are strong and powerful, and they are good at endurance. But 25 miles is a lot for any animal and human. So doing a trot canter pace was really a great thing after the first 10 miles, is to try and start slowing down the heart rate a bit. The rule for me that I made for myself was to walk the last 2 kilometers in to get the heart rate back down so that we would pass the vet check. I did get 2 heart rate penalties. One, well, I would argue both were not entirely my fault, but the first one, that's maybe a little denial right there. The first one really wasn't. The horse was ill. It was colicking. And the very first leg of the first day, you are assigned a horse because it's a mass start. All 47 riders are somehow mounted on and ready to go on a 10 countdown at a mass start, which is apparently in the past is where a lot of injuries do happen as well, because there's just so many horses and they're all running and scattered in different directions. And my horse was colicky, and I made the first leg in 3 hours, which is actually pretty long. And by the time I got in, his heart rate was at 68 and it was elevating as he was resting. And so I had to wait 2 hours right then on the very first day of the first leg. And I was dead last. And I was so demoralized. I was horrified because one of my big goals was horse welfare. I wanted to go away from this race finishing it and not having any heart rate penalties or issues. I mean, the welfare of these horses was absolutely my top priority, along with safety of my own body. And this was quite a way to start the race. But then the next heart rate penalty I got was after, this is on the second day, started out a little rough. I was given a horse. I handed my bridle to the herder in Horton Moor, fast horse. And he hands me this really chonky looking sorrel, the red horse. And when I first hopped on, he was pretty slow. And I was like, okay, well, this is my last leg of the day. I hope we make it. And I trotted around. He was very mellow. And then by the time I turned him in the direction I wanted to go, he bolted and bucked and just split in two. And I was not ready for it because he had been so mellow. And I actually got kicked in the face coming off of him on that horse. He ran back to the horse station. I hiked back with blood pouring out of my face. And was checked over by a medic. Turns out nothing was broken, which was great. I felt fine. I had just cracked my lip open, and I was experiencing some pretty big swelling in my face. But I got back on that horse, and that was the fastest horse I rode the whole Derby. He was deranged. He ran 25 kilometers without stopping, and I could not stop him. I was just a fly on his back, and he was soaring, flying this leg. We passed every single person that was also on that leg, caught back up to like the middle of the pack. And by the time I got to the horse station, which I made it on time, I made it in an hour and 15 minutes. That is ridiculous. And I got a heart rate penalty on him because I could not slow him down. And I got kicked in the face.
Was it fun to ride that fast on a horse like that?
I wish I could have been a little more excited about how fast we were going. I was really scared about the vole holes because it was up and down these hills. And I couldn't even pull my GPS out to see if I was going the right direction. I was kind of screaming as I passed people to see if I was going the right way. It was the ride of my life. But I was filled with terror. It was scary.
So there's in the Mongol steppes, as you call them, and the route changes all the time. There's not a path you're following. You're going across the prairie or the tundra.
Exactly. You're not following a path. You'll come across dirt roads, which is nice because then those don't have the vole holes, and you can really get some speed going on those. But if you're crossing the prairie, the steppe, it's all self-navigated. You're sorting your way as you go.
Another aspect, just listening to you talk, is you start at one point. It's like you never look back. You're moving so fast forward that I was thinking about that first horse. Did you ever find out if he was okay? You can't. You are moving forward. There's so many horses each day and there's new ones all the way along. It's quite amazing. It's fantastic. There's more to the race. Okay, so we're partway. You have this speedy horses that never stop running and stops with the people of Mongolia and at the Gurs, as you call them. What else really stood out? I'm thinking of other challenges. You're talking about the mole holes were always on your mind. Were there any other major challenges besides getting kicked in the face and not stopping?
I guess the endurance part of it all is really remembering that you are doing this for 9 to 10 days, all day, every day, and our bodies aren't necessarily designed to do that. And as much as I ride a lot, I ride a lot of colts, it is so hard on your body. And I think one of the difficult things in this race is hearing as you get through a horse station, you might hear, oh, so-and-so, you know, fell off and is in the hospital, or, oh, you know, you hear of the carnage that's ensuing all around you. And mentally, I had to remind myself quite a bit, ride safe, ride smart, ride safe, ride smart. Get out of the horse's way and be respectful, be kind, like fill your space with love and try and keep yourself in one a kind of mindset that can protect you. And that I think that was one of the harder things, is hearing about other fellow riders having to go back to UB and, you know, in a van with a broken back or a broken neck or a punctured lung or broken ribs. I mean, there was a lot of carnage. Mm. And I am not surprised. I am more surprised that when I crossed the finish line, I was in one piece and smiling and ready for a beer.
And did you get that beer?
Oh, yeah, I got that beer.
Okay, so you were in a town that would have something like that.
No, we did not finish in a town. Finish camp is essentially built up by our support team. And there are, you know, 15 gares or so that is set up for all the riders to sleep in a big kind of party tent looking thing with a ridiculous amount of food and vodka and beer and a huge celebration. But it was also out in the middle of nowhere. It was all trucked in for us.
Right. So you finished 14th out of 47.
Mm-hmm.
And how many total finished in that that year's race?
I believe 32 finished.
Okay.
I could be off by a couple, but there were
15 did not.
Yes. And in various capacities, there were a few people that stopped for emotional. They had tapped out emotionally, and then most of them were tapping out for physical injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what I think is interesting is like one woman ended up having to drop out after day three, merely because the way her fenders, which is kind of what attaches your stirrups to the saddle, were slightly too sturdy, and they bent her legs in a very slight amount. However, a slight amount is an enormous amount after 300 miles, and they tore the ligaments in her ankles. Mm. So, like, just to put into perspective, something that you would never think twice about, like adjusting your seat in your car, if you don't have it adjusted exactly right, imagine, like, tearing a muscle because of that. And that's how extreme these small details are. The other thing that I thought was extraordinary, I did a lot of work on what gear I should take. I took, obviously, what I wore. I wore breeches, boots, chaps. Everyone has to wear a helmet. But in my saddlebag, I brought a sleeping bag, some in case of emergency medicine. I brought a sleeping mat and rain gear. And that's it. Like, you are wearing the same thing every single day. And by the last little bit, you are disgusting. You are just like greasy, gross, dusty, bloody creatures. And there were a few riders that on day one, kudos to you guys, these are some New Zealand friends, they lost their gear and never got it back. So they did the entire derby on spare saddles with no gear. They crushed it. Right. They did it.
Yeah. That's part of the beauty of this. You know, we're kind of getting close to wrapping this up. There's so much more. We could have you on for hours, actually. But I'm here in the KRFY studios, if you're listening, with Lena Haug. She is one of the finishers of the Mongol Derby. And if you want to find out more, she will be down at the Panada Theater for a Pendere Arts Council Performing Arts Series tomorrow night. That's Thursday, November 17th. This event starts at 5 o'clock p.m. with a reception and a showing of the award-winning Mongol Derby documentary, All the Wild Horses, and a question and answer period. So if you're hearing something and you want to know more, this is a golden opportunity. I want to know more. I know that. One of the things we could just touch on real quick, you mentioned support team. It had to take more than just yourself to get you there and get you prepared, get you, you know, the financial picture and everything else. Just briefly, you want to give a shout out to your support team?
Oh, amazing. So as far as riding the race, as much as I'd like to say this is all self-directed, once you're on the horse, you are pretty self-directed. However, I did fundraising for about a year and got an astounding amount of support from my community, strangers, friends. POAC was a huge contributor, and I have so much gratitude for everyone who helped me financially get to Mongolia and do the race. And then not to mention, at the race, there was a crew, not my crew, it was a crew for the whole race, that really kind of was like a blanket to ensure that if you had an emergency, they would send a medic to you. That if you needed a hug, you know, it's one of the vets one morning just gave me the biggest hug, even though I was disgusting. And it just made my absolute day. The vets, the medics, and the crew that holds this whole race and makes it a possibility. Huge kudos. Amazing.
It sounds like you would need that. Okay. Well, anything else you want to say real quick? I'll tell them about the event at the Panada, but I want to thank you for coming in and sharing your amazing story, life adventure. One quick question. Probably no one does it twice, but if you could, would you?
Good question. A few people do it twice. And in our race, we had two people that it was their second time. They are no longer allowing people to do it twice because there are so many applicants. And also, it's kind of beside the point. Mm-hmm. It's if you win it, 80% of this race is luck. You prepare. And then it's luck. For me, I immediately after the race said, there is no way in hell I would do this a second time. It is such an honor and it is such an experience. And to try and reenact every moment of it and try and do it again, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, in my opinion.
Right. I get that. And especially the place you got to in day 4 or 5, as you said.
Yeah.
That was your gift. That's what you got. And you just being a 14th place finisher is a win.
Absolutely.
As we have said a couple times here. So you're an adventurer. I'm sure this isn't going to stop at the Mongol Derby. What's next for you?
That
you want to talk about?
Yeah, a couple things are on the horizon. One is just finishing up a commercial license and bringing aviation, like flying, as my career. I just did get accepted to crew on the Iditarod, dog sled racing in Alaska. So I will be there for 3 weeks in March, and I will be one of few crew members that will be along the entire route of the Iditarod, which I am very excited about.
a very different endurance race, but nonetheless. Okay, well, thank you again, Lena Haug. Again, you will be at the Panada Theater tomorrow night for a Pondere Arts Council Performing Arts Series. This event will be a pre-show, will begin with a pre-show art reception at 5. Will feature showing of the award-winning Mongol Derby documentary, All the Wild Horses, and a question and answer with you on stage. For more information about this event tomorrow night, that's Thursday, November 17th, or for tickets, tickets will be at the door, but you can also call the Pondere Arts Council at 208-263-6139 or artsinsandpoint.org. And there you go. Fascinating. Thank you so much, Lena, for coming in. This has been really exciting and fun for me. It's so much fun to meet you and hear about your adventures.
Thank you, Susie. Appreciate it.
Okay. And KRFY listeners, we're going to go out with a song from this interview. I'll be back a little bit with a few updates and some information, but this is a very appropriate song by America called A Horse With No Name. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Thank you. You're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. I'm Susie Prez here today. I just finished an interview with Lena Haug, who is a finisher in the 1,000-kilometer or 620-mile Mongol Derby. She told us all about it, and if you're interested in hearing more about it, you can go to the Panada tomorrow night, November 17th, that's Thursday, for a Pondere Arts Council Performing Arts Series. This event will be awesome, I guarantee it. It's fascinating, this horse race, and they're going to show a movie, All the Wild Horses, which is an award-winning documentary about the Mongol Derby. And Lena will be there to do a question and answer after the movie. More information about this event and tickets can be found at by calling Pondere Arts Council, 208-263-6139, or you can go to artsinsandpoint.org and find out more. There will be tickets at the door. This is a very exciting thing. Also, if you didn't get to hear the whole interview or you didn't get to hear it at all, you can go to KRFY.org, and under our podcast, about noon today, we will have that interview, the recording of the interview, on the up on the podcast site. A couple things we want to tell you about KRFY. KRFY is currently broadcasting at low power, but today is the last day that we'll be at low power because full power is coming tomorrow. The good news is our antenna is going up thanks to Vector Broadcasting out of Spokane. Tomorrow, that's Thursday, weather permitting, we will be back to full power. So hallelujah to that. We also want to thank KPBX out of Spokane because they lent us a temporary antenna that we have up on our building right here in downtown Sandpoint. Since our big antenna had to come down last in August, but we are looking forward to going back to full power. And speaking of full power, I was driving to Coeur d'Alene yesterday listening to KRFY at 88.5, of course. And I heard it all the way past Kokalala, but normally it goes all the way to Athol. So stay tuned, stay with us, but you can always listen to us streaming at KRFY.org. It's coming up on the morning show tomorrow. Jim and Jack will be in the studio talking with Caitlin Shook, Caitlin of the Shook Twins, about the Panada. Caitlin's on the board, and music, and their upcoming Giving Thanks concert, which will be coming up right before Thanksgiving. I think it's the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Also, Friday, November 18th, will be a rebroadcast of the Idaho Fishing Game interview. Well, it's really a broadcast. It was supposed to play on Tuesday. That didn't happen, so we're doing it on Friday this week, November 18th. There's all kinds of things coming up. Like us on Facebook. It's always a good way to find out more about what KRFY is doing. In the meantime, we're going to go out with another song about wild horses, since we heard all about wild horses in Mongolia today. We have Old and in the Way, Wild Horses. This is a Rolling Stones song, but performed by a kind of a little bluegrass group with Jerry Garcia, David Grisman, and a few more people. This is their version of Old and in the Way. We hope you have a beautiful day. Thanks for listening. This is 88.5 KRFY. It is listener-supported community radio. It is a nonprofit. And if you're so inclined, you can go to our website at KRFY.org. Make a donation. Become a member. Thank you. Have a great day. Here's Olden in the Way with Wild Horses.